Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey everybody, this is DJ Q for the Golf News Net Radio Network. We now return you to Jay's Plays Already in Progress.
All right, we are back. I am Jay Plummer, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. Big thank you to DJ Q, best producer in the business. He's fantastic behind the screen with all of our sound effects and music. Also, thank you to Fish for letting me use their music as a theme song for the show. And, of course, thank you to our sponsor, JB's Best Hot Sauce. It's the best, the spiciest, the boldest, and the most delicious hot sauce on the market. It's on every table, and it can be on yours, too. When it says JB's, it's the best. All right, so Tripp Davis is our guest. He's back for a second segment. Hey, Tripp.
Hi. Good. I hear we're going to talk a little Masters here soon.
Yeah, we're going to hit you up with the trivia question, and we're going to give you a little chance to get a little bit of revenge on me. But first, so I'm going to be running my third half marathon in 6 weeks. In a 2 week period. I'm going to be running Pittsburgh in May. And so your trivia question has to do with marathon running.
Okay.
So here it is. For a bottle of hot sauce and a t-shirt that says I'm a hottie, who was the original Greek who ran from the Battle of Marathon to Athens with the good news? Who was the original Greek who ran from the Battle of Marathon to Athens with the good news of the Greek victory?
A.W. Tillinghast.
We were looking for Philippides.
Okay.
Philippides was the guy who ran the original marathon. I don't know what that means in English, by the way.
Yeah.
And we won't bother to translate because it's a clean show.
Yeah.
Actually, it's funny. The word Eureka actually means this bath is too hot.
Really?
Yes, because that's what the guy shouted when he got into the tub and he burned his rear end and he shouted Eureka. Huh. So, anyway, now you're going to get a chance to stump me as well as we go through this last segment, everybody. As many of you know, I've been trying to memorize every one of the U.S. Open winners and the course they won on in what year. Just because, you know, you really should know those things if you're going to be a golf writer. And I've gotten pretty good. I'm all the way to 1929 forward. So at any time during this segment, you could throw out a year and I will have to drop what I'm doing and come up with an answer. But let's start this segment with the Masters once again. Give us your impressions of what you saw on Sunday when Sergio Garcia was coming down the stretch with Justin Rose.
Well, I thought he'd lost it. I thought, you know, I'm actually a fan of Sergio's. He's had, obviously has some detractors that don't like the pad attitude he's shown at times and so forth, but. And when he bogeyed two holes on the back, I thought he was done. And more so when he hit it, left of the creek on 13. I thought this was it for him. But he showed incredible will and fortitude and fight, which is not something you've really seen out of him at times. In the majors, and I was really, really happy to see him win. I think it was a great story. I think he's, more than deserved it. I think it was great for the game to have him win. I was really excited.
You know, you're absolutely right. He had the two-way miss going on 10 and 11, and then the tee shot into the trees on 13 where he had to take the unplayable. But it just goes to show there's still an awful lot of golf left on the back nine of Augusta. You know, Dan Jenkins likes to say driest ball wins. We didn't see anybody hit one in the water. But he also likes to say that there's five water holes out there, boys. You know, you got to negotiate all the way through 16 before the penalties are out of the way. So a lot can happen. And Sergio just stuck with the game plan, and when he made that eagle on 15, okay, that's when we knew the game was on. Give us also your impressions of Justin Rose's fight, down the stretch as well.
Well, I thought both of them. I mean, it was one of the more exciting Masters, that I can remember for quite a while, where you're seeing birdies and eagles, and the two guys are playing really at the top of their game. And, one of the, it's unusual to see them kind of make some hiccups there. I mean, as well as they were playing, Sergio starting the back nine poorly and then finishing really strong, and Rose making bogey on 17. But I think that was one of the great things about flipping the nines there. You know, the golf course used to play the other way. Nine was 18, 18 was nine. And changing the routing around, Bobby Jones really created a great finish that has a lot of drama.
Temptation, that's the key at Augusta, is, you know, it's just easy enough for you to be able to go for those par fives and two, or to really try to hit that shot close in a dangerous pin. But if you don't pull the shot off, if you don't execute, you know, instead of skyrocketing up the leaderboard, you're going to plummet right back down it. And that's the lead excitement. It's not like a U.S. Open where players sort of percolate, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's a golf course where you can take a lot of risk and you can reap a lot of rewards, especially on the back nine. The front nine, you know, you have to be a little more cautious for the most part. You've got a few holes where you can really take some risk, and really going for the green and two on eight, is there's really no risk. I mean, you can get on the wrong side of the mounds, but you can still make par and even birdie fairly easily. But when you get on the back nine, you've got a lot of shots where if you play to hit a precise shot and you miss it, you can make bogey double bogey. And I think that's what makes it a great finish. And it was so exciting to see those two, who are obviously good friends, you know, really going at it hard down the stretch and kind of separate themselves.
The other beautiful thing about it, though, was watching them congratulate each other's good shots and pat each other on the back as they were making their way around. That was a phenomenal display of sportsmanship as the round was progressing.
It was, and I think it was very genuine. And not just for show. I think the two of them were really excited to be playing at the top of the game and being able to play. They were kind of wanting each other, the other guy to keep pulling them along. It's fun when you get in a match with someone where you're playing really well and it takes birdie to win the hole and pull ahead. And so it was exciting to see that with those two. And again, I think Sergio having won was so good for the game. I think it's a great boost. And whether he or not he wins another one, he'll always be a Masters champion. I would hope he'd like to go on and compete and play well again. I hope this gives him some confidence rather than it being his mountaintop that he's got to come down from.
You know, the other beautiful thing about it is that it was the Masters he won, and it will never be able to be diminished by some of the guys on talk radio or some of the casual fans who might say and sing things like, oh, well, he only won a PGA, or, well, he could only won the British Open because Euros win that, or, well, you know, he plotted his way or backed into a U.S. Open victory. No, it's the Masters, and every single year when he comes back for the rest of his life, we'll remember him. You know, U.S. Open, you remember the guys who won on that particular course, okay? We go back to Oakmont, we celebrate the guys that won at Oakmont. Well, we might not celebrate Sam Parks Jr.
That was going to be one of my
long since 1935. Ah, there's one!
Yeah.
One down, two to go. You know, but we do celebrate Johnny Miller. We do celebrate Larry Nelson and a lot of the other guys. But that we will always remember Sergio dressed in green underneath that full moon. And every year he'll come back for Champions Dinner. Now, you also mentioned the word that is the soul of golf and golf course architecture, and that is temptation. That is risk. And now I'm going to get a chance this year to play two of the courses on the East Coast that you've worked on. One of them immediately, because on Thursday, the Golf Writers Association of America goes to play Engineers, a course I've heard a great deal about. And so I'd like you to fill us in on its ancient history and its recent history. And please make sure you touch on one of the great personalities in golf, and that's Ed Scissorhands Gibstein.
Well, I know Gibby. I've you know, after playing college golf at Oklahoma, I continued to play a lot of amateur golf, and so Gibby and I got to know each other through amateur golf. And the way I actually got my chance to work at Engineers, I was playing with Anderson at Wingfoot, and I'm sitting out on the back patio, and I look over and I see Gibby just talking, you know, about the architect they'd had in there that had redone a couple of greens, and it didn't work out real well, and he was, you know, saying how architects, you know, it's a sham, and, you know, he could have done a better job himself. And then he looks over and sees me, and he goes, oh, that's right, you're an architect. Well, will you come over and look at it for me? And that's how I got my foot in the door, because I shamed him into it. And he was a green shamer at the time. And so Engineers is one of the great old golf courses in our country. It is that special. It's a golf course that you've got to understand that the greens are severe, but the greens are severe there in a way that makes sense. They're not just severe to be severe or to, you know, pull you off your game. Every one of the greens out there, there's a lot of movement in the greens. Tommy Schmoe really was a good player himself and really wanted to create greens where you had to place your shot. Now, keep in mind too that, you know, the greens back then were rolling 6-7 on a stint meter instead of 12 and 13. So, you know, the severity wasn't quite as big a factor. Some of the work that we've done there is actually to go back in and soften some of the greens so that they are playable, but yet still as interesting as they were meant to be. So the key at Engineers is really the greens. And also then placing your ball in the right places in the fairway so that you have a good angle to approach a given hole location. And then the other side of it really is knowing that if you can't get to a certain hole location, where to leave your ball so that you can either two-putt or get the ball up and down. And it's really a throwback golf course in a lot of respects. And if, you know, it's really landlocked, so it can't get very much longer, but it's a blast to play. And really what we've done there over time is work on really restoring some of the greens to where they can be playable again, redoing bunkering back to what was originally intended and the style that was originally intended. You know, we've really tried to get them to go back to kind of the furry edge bunker that Herbert Strong really wanted, but, you know, no one likes to hit it into the bunkers and not find the ball anymore. So other than that, it's really been a great place to work on.
Now, tell us a little bit, because it is so important to golf course architecture and to the health of a golf course and to the movement towards naturalization and minimalism that we're doing. Tell everybody why it is so important to cut down all the trees, and tell us the story of how the trees got cut down in Engineers and gave Gibby his nickname.
Yeah, well, Engineers originally was what was called an inland links. That's what Herbert Strong actually kind of coined it as. And there, because there weren't very many trees, it was a very open golf course. And there were some trees, but you know, the photograph, we had great photography of the course from the 20s when they played the U.S. Amateur in 1920, and you know, they played a Canada Cup there, which, you know, was the forerunner to the World Cup. It was. Engineers was considered one of the top 10 courses in the world in the 1920s. And it was, there weren't very many trees. Over time, both through volunteer trees coming up that were never cut and through planting of trees, it became pretty tree lined. And so Gibby actually started before I got involved with starting to cut trees back. And over time, I don't even remember. I mean, it's probably in the neighborhood of 1,000 trees that we removed, which is not as expensive as some places have done. But what we did was really to try to open up sunlight to the roof so that you could grow roof. A lot of people will say, well, you take the trees out, you're going to make your golf course easier. If it's done well.
No, you don't. No, you exactly. Certainly don't.
You create roof. You know, I played Oakmont before they took trees out, and then I played there in the 2003 U.S. Open, and it was, U.S. Open in 2003, and it was certainly harder. I mean, if you hit it out of the fairway, the rock was so thick, you couldn't advance it. And that's one of the things Wingfoot's done a lot of. And that's what we did at Engineers, was really to remove some trees, you grow rough. It also allowed for greater airflow across the entirety of the golf course, which from an agronomic standpoint was helpful for the cool season grasses. They like to stay dry, and airflow helps that. And then just from a general aesthetic perspective, being able to see across the entirety of the golf course. There you can stand on 5T and you can see a lot of the golf course now, whereas before, you saw number 5 and that was it.
Well, I'm looking very much forward to seeing Gibby when I get to Engineers this week. I had a good laugh, okay. He actually holds a record at the Travis Invitational. You were mentioning the Anderson Memorial, one of the great amateur and mid-amateur tournaments. He actually holds a record with Walter Travis for longest period of time between medalist victories. Okay, Dave, as you know, 14 years. Walter Travis won his first. 14 years later, he won his last. And Ed did the same thing. He won his first, I believe it would have been 1994, and he won his last in 2008. And so My headline for the magazine read, Edward Scissorhands 2. He hated it. You know, it's funny. Okay, we talk about this. Did you ever see the movie Inglourious Basterds, the Quentin Tarantino movie? Okay. Do you remember the scene where the hunter catches Aldo Rain and he's sitting with him and he talks about nicknames and he says, I don't know why that other guy wouldn't like his nickname because he's done everything possible to earn it. I don't know why Ed would be upset with that nickname because he did everything possible to earn it. He chopped down 1,000 trees and it was a beautiful thing. Okay. And we all celebrate Engineers for the great victory that it was in terms of architecture and in terms of minimalism and forwarding, the cause. So Gibby is a part of golf history in that respect.
Yeah.
And he's a hell of a player, too.
Oh, yeah, he still is. I played the Travis a couple of years ago, and unfortunately I can't play this year because it's the same week as the American Society of Golf Course Architects annual meeting, but I played a couple
of years. And by the way, where is the ASGCA meeting this year?
Palm Beach.
And what about the Anderson? Will you be at the Anderson?
I am going to play the Anderson. I have not played the Anderson in 10 years. And J.B. O'Hara, J.P. called me this year and said, I would love for you to come back if you can find a partner. And the funny thing was I called a bunch of the guys at my home club in Oklahoma, Oak Tree, and all these kids. I said, hey, do you want to go play with me? Mr. Davis can't do it. And I realized, they didn't think they had a chance to win with me anymore.
Wait a minute. I don't care about a chance to win. I would give my eye teeth for a chance to play 2 days in Wingfoot. You get to play the East Course and the West Course. Yeah. You get to have the galleries cheer you on. You get to walk in history. You get to have lunch in the grill room. They'll make you mimosas. I mean, really, it's an experience. These kids these days, okay? It's like, did you mention that it's in Wingfoot?
I found a guy that's actually a senior. I had to call JP and say, is it okay if I bring a senior to play in the mid-am division? And so, but yeah, I'm going to come up. We're looking forward to it.
Look, next time you need a partner, you call me.
Okay, I will.
No, you definitely will see me there anyway. I'm happy because I cover the Anderson every year. It's on the calendar. It's one of my favorite tournaments. It's absolutely a joy to watch. And, man, the golf is just plain sublime. But the golf course wins every year, too. That's one of the true greats winning. But once again, Tillinghast, you know, his greatest masterpiece. I have called Wingfoot West, I believe it to be, the Yankee Stadium of golf.
Oh, yeah. It's, you know, both courses are great, but the West course has it's got big shoulders, and it really tests every part of your game. It doesn't scare you. But it makes you just hit great golf shots from beginning to end. And it's fun to play, which is unusual. I mean, you rarely come across a golf course that is so difficult to score on that requires a lot of very good shot making, but it is still fun to play. And that's what makes it, you know, one of my favorites.
I'll tell you, from an amateur standpoint, from a bogey golfer's standpoint, I find Wingfoot, even the West course, very playable. Okay, the fairways are wider than you'd expect. The nice thing about the folks at Wingfoot is they're not crazy like the wonderful folks at Oakmont. Okay, Oakmont, they're like, let's see how hard we can make it and how miserable. Let's see who's going to be absolutely hating it. You know, but at Wingfoot, they're like, no, come on out and play golf. They shave the rough down to a reasonable level. They keep the greens at a reasonable speed. The first time I played the West course, I'm a bogey golfer, I shot 86. Was very proud of my round. You can manage your game beautifully, you know, if you just keep the ball in front of you and minimize mistakes.
So. Well, as Augusta National has a great finish, it has a rhythm that produces a great finish or exciting finish. Wingfoot has a rhythm that is constantly keeping you off kilter. And that's what makes it difficult to score on, because it has a rhythm to where you start the golf course. Number one is, you know, very difficult hole. And as you play around the golf course, it's hard to catch your breath, and get a, you know, a leg up. You know, you come into number nine, and especially when it's played as a par four, and then you go to 10, which is a very difficult hole. The rhythm of the golf course, it gives you chances at places throughout the round, to keep you interested and keep you feeling like, you know, I've got a chance to continue to score well. But it also makes it very difficult to score, and continue that consistently. It's just got a great rhythm for a difficult golf course. Whereas I guess
one last question before we
for fun.
One last question before we have to close up shop just for this particular segment. So you better hustle with those other 2 years you're going to throw me. Whippoorwill is another one that you've done some work on. And so tell us about the ancient history and the modern history of that great Westchester County golf course.
Well, designed by Charles Banks, the current course. It was originally designed by Donald Ross. And funny story there is that the president of the club wanted Ross. He won out. And the guy that really wanted Charles Banks to do it, and Seth Rayner actually, you know, to do it originally before Mr. Rayner passed away, he actually fought and became president of the club so he could have Banks come in and redo what Ross had done.
Sounds like a good idea to me, okay? I'd play a Banks course. I'd play Forsgate. So anytime Charles Banks came in, I would have loved whatever he would have done.
Well, it's a great old golf course. I mean, it's got some severity to it in terrain in places, but the way that Banks really linked up the really difficult parts of the course from a topography standpoint, made it great. It, you know, one of the better Blitz I've ever seen, at number eight there. A Blitz hole is a green, for those who don't know, it's a green that is very long. It can be 70, 80 yards long, and the front of the green is elevated. The middle is depressed, and the back is elevated. And the way that Banks and Rayner and McDonald would use them as designers is they would would give you enough teeing ground where the hole could play 130 yards long or 230 yards long. and just, you know, great variety. And so that's whippoorwill. I mean, it's we've done a lot of work there. We've got most of the greens restored back to their original bank size. We've got most of the bunkers restored. Few little things that we're wanting to do to move some bunkers around, like I said, to restore the original intent. And this spring, we're just finishing up building a completely new practice facility. Nothing on the golf course this year.
Our Baritz green at the Banks course at Forest Gate at number 17 is 98 yards from stem to stern, with a swale 20 feet across and 6.5 feet deep.
That's huge.
Mind you, 20 feet across at the low point, not the high point. It's further up because it is enormous. It's even got the horseshoe feature on the back section. Oh, yeah, it's got the tusk bunkers extending, and it can stretch out to 275 yards. It's a museum piece, that hole.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're going to have to let you go, but you get two shots to stump me. Pick a couple of years.
Anyway, one of mine was Larry Nelson and Oakmont. I mean, I grew up in Atlanta, and Larry's an Atlanta guy, and I knew that one really well. You probably know this one, but where did Hale Irwin won one in Ohio? Where was it and what year?
Oh, that's one of my favorite stories. He won at Inverness in 1979, the famous Lon Hinkle Open.
Right.
Okay, but here's what happened. Everybody knows this story, but I'm going to tell it to you anyway. Okay, Lon Hinkle teed up on the 8th hole into the 17th fairway. He went over the trees. Right. And that
night... He went through the trees.
No, he went over the trees. He went over the trees into the 17th fairway and then played over with an 8-iron. He turned a par 5 into a par 4, and everybody heard about it and followed it. So that night... The USGA has a meeting on that tee box, okay, and it's no less a personage than Mike Strantz, who planted the infamous Blue Hill Spruce, okay?
Wow.
But here's the untold story. Strantz kept telling the USGA guys, you've got it in the wrong spot. You've got it in the wrong spot. It's not where it's supposed to go. You got to move it over. And they wouldn't listen to it. Okay, so the next day, when Lon Hinkle got there, he saw that there was a little narrower gap, and that's what he went between. He dodged that spruce and went over again. But here's my favorite story. Even little guys my size, like Chi-Chi Rodriguez, tried it and did it. And so Maria Perez says for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, get to Chi-Chi in the interview room, who had a very good round. He goes, Chi-Chi, how the heck did you get the ball up in the air that high? And Chi-Chi said, well, I teed the ball up on a golf pencil. And so Maria says, well, wait a minute. How did you get the ball to sit still on the pencil? He goes, well, I hollowed out the top of the pencil so that the ball would sit on it. And then Marino says, well, what did you use to hollow out the top of the pencil? And that's when Chi-Chi said, a divot tool. They don't allow Puerto Ricans to carry knives in Ohio.
That's funny.
You got one more try to get me.
All right, one more. I'm going to think of, I'm trying to think of one.
While you're thinking, the other two that Hale Irwin won, he won the Massacre at Wingfoot in 1974, where he beat Forrest Fesler, and then he won in 1990 at Medina when he beat Mike Donald in a playoff after holding a 45-foot putt on the 72nd hole.
Okay, let me think. They're all so familiar to me. I mean, I can think of, Casper winning at Olympic in 66. Baltusrol was six. It was Nicklaus in 67.
Nicklaus at Baltusrol in 67, and then Trevino at Oak Hill in 68. His first major victory, where he said, now that I used to be a Mexican, but now that I win majors, I think I'm going to be a Spaniard.
So, I mean, you're going to get all these. I mean,
that's the same man that introduced himself. That's the same man who introduced himself to the Prince of Wales by saying, you ever shake a Mexican's hand before?
I'll ask you one. I can't think of off the top of my head. Who won in 61 and where?
That was Gene Littler at Oakland Hills.
Okay.
And there it is. Well, guys, thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We're going to have one more guest come on the show very quickly. Tripp, it was great to have you. We got to do this again.
Absolutely. And I'll get up and we'll go play somewhere.
I love that idea. When you're in anywhere near New York City, you look me up and we will go play. Everybody, you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. You can go to jayflama.com and read all my stuff, or www.thegolfnewsnet.com. We will be right back after.
We're at the end of another great Jay's Plays show, but thank you all so much for joining in. It's no fun doing this to an empty room, but it sure is fun doing it for all of you guys, so thanks so much. I want to thank Fish for kindly letting me use their great music as a theme song for the show. Thanks, guys. I want to thank CyberGolf and Golf News Network, cybergolf.com/writerscorner, including me and all the other fine writers, and thegolfnewsnet.com/radio. Take us home, DJ Q.
Tune in next time for another great Jay's Play show on the Golf News Net Radio Network.
Thanks, guys. Catch y'all next time.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.